Welcome everybody, this is the Scrutiny Management Board, 8th of August. Thank you everybody for attending. This meeting will be recorded and the sound recording subsequently made available via the Council's website. Please also know that under the openness of Local Government Body Regulation 2014, other people may film, record, tweet or blog from this meeting. The use of any images or sound recordings is not under the Council's control. Okay, we'll go to item one, which is apologies.
An apology from Councillor Ransom, Chair, and also Councillor Morgan is the cabinet member for item eight and is unable to attend.
Okay, thank you. And then we've got item two, which is the minutes. Can I sign them off as a true record of the minutes?
Agreed.
Thank you. Item three is disclosures of pecuniary and personal interests. Would anybody like to disclose anything there? Then we've got item four, which is declarations of the party writ. Any declarations of the party writ? Agenda item five is questions under scrutiny committee procedures 11.16, and we haven't had no questions submitted, which swiftly takes us over to item six, which is the scrutiny work programme and issues arising from scrutiny groups and panels. We've got Jeff Parker here, Chief Executive, who would like to take us through the paper. Is that okay, Jeff?
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, so relatively light report this time. So you've got on page one of the report the actions that are requested. There are five of them. The first one is a request from Policy Scrutiny Group that they made on the 10th of July that the scrutiny of the light bulb service implementation be allocated to a different scrutiny body. Do you want me to do them one by one or something?
Yeah, shall we do them one by one? We can make a decision and then move on. So item one, did they...
That was originally last time on the overview scrutiny groups work programme.
Okay.
For pre-decision scrutiny, so I don't know whether that's the most appropriate group for it to be returned to.
Possibly not, because they look at pre-decision cabinet scrutiny, don't they? So it's probably not.
Chair. What we're looking to, we're looking for the implementation of it.
Yeah.
So when this scheme was introduced, the cabinet made a resolution that it be reviewed after a period of time, I think it was 12 months, and there'll be a further report back to cabinet.
That's a good performance, I think.
This was to check progress with it, how it was being actually implemented.
Okay. Is there a suggestion that we ask performance to have a look at it?
And that seems the one that seems, if that's what we're looking at, is actually the performance of the implementation, basically. I'm just wondering if it was, it's already been looked at on the 10th of July, so we're now looking, is that right? Did they look at it then, or was that when it was decided to ask it to go to another?
I don't believe they looked at it. I think they considered their work programme
and asked for it to be,
referred to another body when they looked at their work programme.
So when was it decided, when was the 6 months?
We're scheduling it sometime around October, I believe. October, November.
So your next meeting.
Thank you. I think on the policy we decided it was an existing policy, if you could call it as that. So the policy scrutiny group wasn't the right media for it, and our performance is. And I think it's just a case of having a report and see how it's unfolding and developing.
Okay, we're happy for it to be reallocated to performance scrutiny panel.
Agreed.
Okay. Thank you.
The second item, you'll recall that there was a suggestion here that there may be a panel convened to look at universal credit. There's been some further work on that, and as a result of that further work, it's now proposed that we don't actually progress with that panel work.
Okay, we agree with that. I think Councillor Bevington did refer to me after he met with officers, and I'm happy with that decision to not go ahead with the panel.
You then have at the third item, Appendix 1, which is the forthcoming list of key decisions, and that's there for you to be able to consider whether there are any items in there that you feel should be added to a scrutiny work programme, and if so, which one. So that's on page 6. And it starts off with items scheduled for Cabinet in September. Which there are 5 of them. Obviously these are all potentially subject to consideration by OSG, but there may be some that you feel should go to some other scrutiny body, time permitting, because obviously 13th of September is not that far away now.
There's Jeff, if I can interrupt, there's one that I'd like Overview Scrutiny Committee to look at, which is the future sanctuary provisions for Loughborough. I think there's been a press release to say it's been...
It's in the paper today.
It's out for
consultation.
Yeah, for the public consultation. And then the paper will go to Cabinet on September, and I'd think like them to have a look at that.
They've already got it programmed.
They've already got it programmed. Brilliant.
There's also within that September batch of reports, there's the provision of environmental services, which is a major contract. So this is for Cabinet to consider.
I think that
the options of taking that. So
is
that already programmed?
Do we have the power? Councillor Parsons, do we have the power to insist that OSG looks at something?
SMB, yes, you've done the work programme.
I raise my concerns that both this year's capital plan outturn, general fund and HRA revenue outturns went through Cabinet without scrutiny. OSG chose not to look at either of those two reports. And the outturn is probably the key first chance we have to scrutinise the performance of the accounts. And I would very much like capital plan outturn, general fund, HRA outturns to have to be looked at by somebody before Cabinet passes. I was extremely uncomfortable and voiced that loudly. So neither of those two were looked at this year before Cabinet passed them. So the 18-19
reports out are in the middle of page 9, and if you wish to do so, you can.
I would like OSG to have to scrutinise those two reports, because that is the first time we get to monitor the performance of the council in real time. That's the first chance we get to look at the accounts. And I found it very uncomfortable Cabinet passed them with no scrutiny. I didn't think that was appropriate.
Do board members feel, Councillor Heaton?
I want to speak something.
Oh, okay, that's fine. So, Jeff says it's already programmed in our work programme, so we can ask OSG to have a look at it in June next year.
If you wish to put it on the work programme for OSG now, you can do that if you all, as a board,
the first chance you get to actually look at the performance of the accounts, because it's the first time we see the outturn. And Cabinet passed them very quickly after the year end. And we need to be looking at the outturn accounts against what we said was going to happen. Very quickly, they need to be scrutinised so that we can go back to Cabinet and say whether we're comfortable with it or not. We see them in audit after Cabinet have passed them, but it's a completely pointless exercise. We see them in audit committee to comment and discuss, but Cabinet's already passed it.
I'll second that proposal, and they go to OSG.
Okay, at their first cycle, as soon as they're published. Okay, I think we're all agreed on that one. Councillor Seaton.
Thank you, Chair. If you go to page 7, the future options for the provisions of revenues and benefits, then I request that goes to OSG as well, please. That's to consider which one of the options for future provision. I'd just like that looked at.
Okay.
And before we skip completely over it, the light bulb implementation is on there for October, the one was about a few months ago. That's the time scale.
So if that's the time scale,
you've just decided to refer that to performance panel.
So should that go to performance before it goes to Cabinet? Or after
the decision,
when is the next? Sorry, we're just finding out the date of the next performance panel.
Well, there's one next week, or in August, and then the next one I think is in
the 9th of October.
So maybe the 9th of October one is good. The paper should be published. You could have a look at it before it goes to Cabinet, and it also means that OSG probably won't have to look at it so you don't know how to scrutinise it twice.
If you go for the 9th of October, that will be after Cabinet agenda publication, I think.
Yeah, so you can look at the paper.
So it might be that we defer the consideration of it until November Cabinet. Because if scrutiny look at it and then want to make recommendations,
yeah,
we need time to feed those through.
Yeah.
So it only leaves 9 days,
doesn't it? Well, it's published by then. Because we published 10 days before the meeting.
I think if it's got two options, sorry, Councillor Seaton, if it's got two options, I think it needs to be looked at before it goes through.
Yeah. Okay.
So I carry on page 7.
Please.
We've got the MTFS in November.
That's going to budget scrutiny panel.
We've also got some standard reports. We've got the capital plan and procurement plan updates and the next round of Charnwood grants. But then in December, right in the middle of the page there, we've got the budget for the next year, the general fund budget, which again will be through
budget.
the budget scrutiny panel. Over the page to page 8. Into February now, there's the Treasury Management Strategy Statement and MRP plus the Annual Investment Strategy and then the final budget. They're both in February. Again, update reports on the Capital Plan, Procurement Plan and the Housing... those two will be in March, and the Housing Capital Programme, which is the 2019-20 Capital Programme, is scheduled for March 19. Cabinet. You may also be interested, I'm sure everyone will be interested in the next one, which is the local development scheme, which is the it's not the local plan, it's the programme to produce the local plan.
Is it the new local plan?
Or is it the local plan that's going to be new when it's published? I think at that stage, and looking at the date and the timing, I think we're going to be a little bit preoccupied with other things on our mind.
I think we'd have to be careful what we do.
Yeah, I think we will
The only one remaining in this civic year is the business plan in March.
Yeah, and I think it wouldn't make us it worthwhile looking at the business plan, especially with a new administration coming in May. Okay. I think we'll leave it as it is. Yeah.
Okay, so if I move to the procurement plan, which starts on page 16, that's the current list of contracts, tenders or quotes or waivers, however we're going to procure the works, but the actual item is the third column, that are being undertaken in the range £25,000 to £75,000 contract value. So if you've seen this before.
So the first
eight
have already been done.
This is because this, of course, is the annual
programme.
So
they're in progress.
So we don't really look at them. Some of them might be finishing.
Well, this is a piece of information.
So you may
decide, notwithstanding the fact it's been procured, you may want to know what happened and how successful the contract was and.
Can I ask a single, just a question? On page 28, 28.7, and it's probably my lack of understanding. Tenant home content insurance seems to me to be a recurring item that surprises me that it's there as an addition. I would have thought that was an annual recurring item that wouldn't have had to be added as an addition. So I understand door entry maintenance is a one-off cost that we couldn't plan for. I'm surprised that tenant home content, maybe I don't understand that tenant home content insurance is, but I would have thought that was an annual recurring cost which would be built into the main procurement plan, not something that drops into an additions.
Would it go into additions because there's change of people going in there which could have different requirements? For example, you may have...
I can't answer all that detail. I suspect it's not an annual one. I suspect it's for something like 4 or 5 years.
Okay, I'm asking so that I understand.
It's cropped up at this particular time because it's time to renew it, I suspect.
Okay.
It might be worth getting a...
just a clarification.
Yeah,
it would seem to me that normal insurance is an annual recurring cost that you're building.
4 years.
It's a four-year
contract.
Okay.
Councillor Seaton.
As I understood it from several years ago, it was something that we arranged for tenants that didn't have or couldn't arrange contents insurance themselves.
And it wasn't expensive, it was like £20 or £30 a year, I think it was.
To put on their rental, so they paid for the insurance.
If you'd like us to send a note round after the meeting of what it actually is, how much it is and how it works, because I believe it's arranged by the council but on a recovery basis.
I remember we did.
I just wanted it because it seemed to me insurance would be an annual recurring, so that's an unusual thing. If that's what it is and that's the explanation, that's fine, I understand that.
Okay.
Right, where are we back to? Page 16.
Well, whatever, it's all this. All these pages are procurement issues. It's just whether there are any on the list. Obviously, they're in bands of value, so it might be the larger value ones you want to look at.
Sorry, I think I should have, whether I looked to you, Jeff and Laura, whether I should have declared an interest in item one on page 16. I'm chairman of the Outwards Management Committee. Yeah. And that was...
Well, we're not going to discuss it.
I think it's okay.
Councillor Seaton.
I've run around lots of things. You'll be glad to hear. The first one is number 14, which is ICT facilities for meeting rooms, presentation, video and audio facilities for the 14 meeting rooms. Oh, that's gone, hasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, it's all right. Ignore me then. I'll go to the next ringed one.
Right.
I've not run out of them. You're all right. That's affordable housing needs and mixed study.
What page you want?
Sorry, 19. Affordable housing needs and mixed study.
A mix of housing.
Oh, yeah. I know what it would be, but who's doing the study? Does it go out, or what's
this? Is something that will be done by? It says it kind of alludes to there. We'll get quotes for the work. So this is a piece of evidence, I think, for the local plan being done by Planning and Regeneration. So it's one of the various bits of the jigsaw of evidence to build up.
Okay, sheltered housing review feasibility study. Feasibility of what?
So we've got
done
14 or 13
sheltered
schemes.
They're in department order.
And what we're looking is to remodel the schemes or decide what to do with the schemes, because as you've probably realised, some of them are not really fit for purpose because they don't have their own bathrooms and kitchens. They don't have those facilities. So we've got to look at what we do with those properties in the long term, so we're getting some help to actually, I think it's really property evaluation about the cost and value of actually refurbishing these properties, or whether we should sell them or decamp tenants. A bit like we've done on some of the other places.
Yeah. The other one then has gone. But what community hub was it? I'm looking
that
in that
was
direction.
Out at Thorpe.
Yeah, Thorpe
was
the one.
Yeah.
Good.
And, that's gone as well. Why is drainage clearance and CCTV inspection on the same? That's all I was going
to say. What page are you on?
Page 23. It's gone anyway, and just said. But drainage clearance and CCTV inspection.
It's CCTV inspecting the drains.
Yeah. Oh, right.
Putting the camera down the drains, yes.
You see, I don't think outside the box. I just saw drains in the road and it was CCTV.
You
just
send a fox down.
Little boys.
Little terrier. Have you ever wanted to wind the clock, man? Can we erase that? Carry on.
Okay, brilliant. Is there anything else that anybody would like to raise?
Nothing I want to bring to your attention.
Cheers, thank you very much.
Thank you.
If we're happy with the scrutiny work programme.
I've got one more item I'd like to. I'd like to have permission of SMB to scope out the panel with regard to the incinerator at Shep Shed.
Mm-hmm.
The incinerator planning was passed in an adversarial situation with the council opposing it. So that decision has been made and gone, went to appeal, and the appeal found in favour of the incinerator being built. However, I think there is value to be added in terms of looking at the effects of the incinerator and impact with regard to a number of issues which this council is directly involved with. One, as I understand the evidence from the work I've done already, the incinerator will suck in recycling, and the impact of other incinerators on our recycling rates is likely to be detrimental, because it will need to be fed because the size of it, and evidence elsewhere where incinerators have been built, there are issues with regard to recycling. Two, transport movements. Three, air quality. I'm not sure that most of our Olympic sports people living at Loughborough, coming in, Loughborough University, encouraging more elite sporting facilities, just built 600 rooms, the top floor of which is a suite of oxygen lowering chambers and high quality facilities to bring in international teams, are going to love the fact that the prevailing wind from the incinerator, let's just forget that it blows directly across Garendon within 500-600 yards, but will come across Loughborough, sub 2 micron particulates. All of the research and the evidence is not good with regard to that. So I think there is a range of work that we can do, and I'd just like to get that scoped out for a panel with regard to the impact of the incinerator, evidence that we can gather on that basis. I think there is value added to our communities. I think there is value added to Loughborough. I think part of that work, I am told, I don't know this for fact, I am told there may well be work going on to provide baseline data with regard to air quality, because I'm not sure how much we do. From the work I've done looking through past papers on the council's website, I'm not sure we monitor air quality at the motorway junction. We have air quality monitors in certain parts of Loughborough, but from what I can see historically, we don't have them on our website recorded at the motorway junction. So the incinerators, there's a whole raft of incinerators being planned up the length of the M1, because in effect they hide them behind the background noise of the pollution of the motorway. That's in effect how they do it. So the decision's been made, it's got planning permission, and work is starting on financing it with Covanta, being a financier in partnership with BIFA. But I think there's room for us to have a panel to look at the impact and likely impact of the incinerator on Loughborough. I'm not sure I'd want to be rushing to buy houses in Garendon so close to the incinerator, and that's going to affect our 5-year supply. So I think there's a range of issues that this panel can add impact to. I'd like to scope out that document and then bring it back to this panel at the next meeting.
Councillor Arrington.
Yes, I don't know whether to declare an interest in this, because I'm actually on the liaison committee, and I would actually strongly suspect that a lot of what Councillor Parsons has actually brought forward will be the subject of things that we actually cover, because I'm on the liaison committee.
Okay, thank you.
As part of that,
I think you're better declaring it than not.
Yeah, I actually think that would be a unnecessary duplication.
Okay.
We do have people that are, I've certainly worked with this type of plant before, and we have other people that are knowledgeable in this area, and I think they will actually do a perfectly adequate job. If the council would like copies of the reports that we do, then I'm sure we would be willing to supply those, but they will be available anyway, because this obviously has to go through detailed planning. They can't just build what they like, it has to satisfy appropriate standards and whatnot. So those will be available to the council through the detailed planning process anyway. So, but I actually think that would be duplication.
Okay, thank you. Does anybody else want to suggest anything before we make a decision? I just a comment on the panel itself and the proposal. The incinerator is not built yet, and there's no immediate plans to get it started, because obviously it has to go through the detailed planning application. It may be a bit premature as doing this piece of work, but I think there is merit in doing the work. And I think there's merit in scoping it out and then making a final decision on whether we go ahead and have a panel or not. So I understand your comments entirely, but I think it's going to have a major impact on the residents of that part of the borough. And it's just not the university, it's also Shepshed, the town of Shepshed itself, which is going to be directly where the incinerator is located. And I think Councillor Parsons right, if there is something that we can do to gather the evidence to say, look, this might happen. That's not to say that we use it to feed into the planning process or anything. That's just, it's for our own internal purposes, I think. But there has to be added value, and I think we can make that decision once the document's been scoped, and we can make a decision on whether we want to go ahead or not with the panel. And our next meeting is on in October. And I suppose if we can get scoping document back for October, then as a panel, scrutiny panel, management panel, we can decide then whether we go ahead or not. Councillor Fry, you wanted to come
in. I'm just wondering how much we're duplicating what's already been done by the liaison committee.
Which is fine, because we could...
I mean, you know, a lot of time and effort is already being put into things.
I understand that.
I think, certainly, if someone would like to do the scoping document, bring it back to us. But I do think there's already a committee that obviously includes various bodies, not just councillors, looking at this, probably with a great deal of expertise.
Yeah, that's fine. If the scoping document comes back and finds, when they scope it out, they come back and find that there is going to be duplication, that is something that we can bear in mind when we make that decision.
If a scoping document's been made, it needs to be coordinated what's already been done and looked at, because if things have already in place or under work, there's no point in us starting. Doesn't add value to this at all.
But I'd like to know what is out there, you know, and what work has been done. I understand it's there, but asking what exactly is out there.
Yeah.
And maybe the scoping document could bring that back.
Can I just ask a minute? Because are people like the LCC and people like that involved in this as well? And other bodies, I mean, obviously Environmental Agency and goodness knows as well. But parts of it will come under different bodies, county council as well.
Well, there are certain regulatory parts of that, some for us, but I think there's the ownership and management of it.
Yes.
There's also the kind of customer base, if you like, so to speak, who would actually be the clients. Yeah. And obviously the county council is a waste disposal authority, so
they're a client.
Might become a client, but it could be other
bodies as well.
Other clients.
Okay.
That's the seating as well.
I think a scoping document is sensible to do. Somebody's prepared to do that. As long as it's not used as a scaremongering document at all, which it could be with the language that you presented a minute ago, I think it could be used as a positive view that we're examining all sides of this.
Mm-hmm.
As long as the scoping document does include other authorities or other places that have had this.
Absolutely.
And the results that are that have
That's
come
how we
from
best
those.
Assess impact.
Yeah.
And so I think it's good, but I don't want it to be
Absolutely.
A scaremongering document.
No. Councillor Parsons, just to say that October, I think that should give you sufficient time to draft up a scoping document. Does anybody want to work with Councillor Parsons? Because sometimes we do it in twos and threes on the scoping document, or are you happy to do it on your own?
I'm happy to work with somebody, happy to do it.
Okay. Okay, we're happy to leave it with you.
Okay,
fantastic. Thank you very much. I think that's item six
that's
done with.
Item
Cheers.
Seven, yeah.
Thank you very much, Jeff. Thank you for that. Which swiftly brings us to item seven. I think we should do item eight first, actually. No, not really. Guys, item seven, come on over. Which is the Crime and Disorder Reduction and Community Safety Partnership Panel. And for the benefit of the recording, once you've sat down, if you can introduce yourself, that'd be great. Councillor Taylor, if I can ask you to introduce yourself, and then we'll go to your right, and then you can carry on with the paper.
Thank you. Chair, Councillor Deborah Taylor, lead member for Community Safety and Chair of the Community Safety Partnership at Charnwood.
Julie Robinson, Head of Neighbourhood Services here at Charnwood Council.
Tim McKay, Community Safety Manager here at Charnwood Council.
Sergeant Paul Leighton, Deputy Commander for Charnwood Policing Area.
Brilliant, thank you very much. Cheers, thank you. So we have item 7 in front of us, which is the Crime and Disorder Reduction and Community Safety Report, which comes to us every 6 months, I believe, Jeff. And we've had a previous report, and this is an updated report. So can I hand over to the officers or Councillor Taylor to present?
Thank you, Chair. I'll start off. I apologise if I'm a little bit rusty. I just got back from Holly Hubs for this afternoon, so I'm trying to stay awake, but I'm a little bit rusty. So I take it you've all gone through the report. Obviously, I became lead member of this in May this year, so I've only done a few months of this at the moment, so this is obviously covering the last 6 months. So at the moment, all our crime overall has increased by 12.6% at the close of 2017-18 performance year. And looking at the average across other areas as well, there's been a 23% increase. So our crime's come down overall from our similar family group that we're compared with. So from last year, from 10th out of 15, we've gone to 7th out of 17th. The report you've been given today is under the three themes of the Community Safety Partnership: making communities safer, protecting vulnerable people, and improving community confidence, engagement and cohesion. So at quarter one of 18-19, increase of crimes, 324 crimes overall. Burglary residential is down by 6.9%, burglary commercial is down by 28.3%, theft from motor vehicle is down by 35.5%, and robbery is down by 12.5%. So I think, you know, even though crime's up, there are some good areas that we have managed to bring crime down. Where we've still got challenges is violent crime is up by 6.5%, shoplifting is up by 26%, cycle theft is up by 14.9%, and they're all following the national trends as well. I think the main areas that we've got at the moment that we're really targeting is we have an increase in knife crime. I think we're all aware of what's happening in the borough with knife crime, especially amongst 13 and 17 year olds. We've still got quite a lot of drug related crimes within the area, and that's impacting as well with mental health as one of the main factors as well. Significant increase in cuckooing, where flats have been taken over of vulnerable people, and an increase in youth crime and identification of the urban street gang in Loughborough by Leicestershire Police, and an increase in street related antisocial behaviour, particularly begging. I think the main thing that we are working hard on going forward is the development of drug misuse strategy, and that was brought to the last Community Safety Partnership for the police to start to draw that up with the involvement of us as well, working together. Increased focus on deterring youths from carrying knives, and the early identification of adults at risk from the offence of cuckooing and financial exploitation, and we're working with housing and things like that as well across there. And an increase in the use of civil injunctions targeting the criminal activities of persistent offenders. And the Loughborough Urban Street Gangs, there's now three civil injunctions in place to tackle the offending, and on the 29th of June the partnership presented its evidence at the County Court, which resulted in a persistent beggar receiving a 12-month condutio sentence. So that was a really good result for us as well. But happy to take any questions along with the team. Don't want us to know it all.
Thank you very much.
Wait for questions till they've all had their bit.
No, we'll okay. Go into questions now, and then you can answer the questions. Is that okay? And then we can carry on if there's anything.
Okay.
Who wants to go first? Councillor Seaton.
Right, if I could just draw your attention to page 6, which is the crime performance data by Beat. And obviously, I've only looked at Beat 61 because that's the only one I'm bothered about. And of course, I'm going to make my normal plea that I do for the last 10, 20, 30 years is have a separation there between Syston and Thurmaston. And I would like to see what the retail park, their crime figures are like. It's gone up 26% shoplifting, and I think there needs to be, and I presume there is, a deterrent or working with companies to make it less easy to pilfer from the shops. If it's gone up 26%, I think it must be that the stores are accepting that, because they don't seem, I can walk in and out of Asda with anything that I want to do. The only thing that's stopping me is the fear of getting caught. Not necessarily that I'm a law-abiding person, it's the fear of getting caught. And if somebody is of that nature anyway, I am a law-abiding person. And I think they need to be more accountable, because it is screwing up your figures, and I don't see any evidence of stores taking responsibility for this. Have you got anything to say on it?
Sergeant Paul Latham, I mean, shoplifting across the board is increasing, as we can see from the figures. Thurmaston's not particularly. Our biggest area is the City Club Beach around Dishley Haddon, and it's a particular store, it's a chain supermarket. Mm. We do a lot of work with them locally and nationally as well to try and get them to address issues. Which, yes, we can do the offending and do the offenders, it's very much around the stores trying to reduce the offence in the first instance. What's that to design? Mm. The issue is certainly some of the bigger chains have got an amount of accepted shoplifting, they'll just write off in their losses. And the way they look at it, certainly the store look I'm aware of, they have a certain amount of money for a security guard, a certain amount they're allowed to write off. As long as the cost of security doesn't go above the cost of losses, they're reducing the security. We've had this conversation with them. In fact, a DI from headquarters went out to see them a fortnight to this particular store, again to try and address them, well, you need to do something to alter the design of your store. Basically, they've got two doors, one guard, one door's next to the alcohol. The guy's on the other door. Guess what goes missing most often from that particular shop? It's the alcohol, because it's such an easy in the door, grab someone out the door again. The problem we're going to have is we cannot force them to change the layout or do that which the shop did. What we are doing is saying to them, we won't investigate it anymore. Which doesn't help, because it's still a thing on the records. So it's still recorded as a shoplifting. We're saying to them, if you don't do something to reduce the amount, then we will no longer investigate the kind of shoplifting that's done. Depending on who the shoplifter is, remember we have certain prolific shoplifters.
I do apologise.
No, you're fine. So we'll always target prolific shoplifters. We'll try and target them, the offender. We can actually get the offenders wrapped up, beaten some kind of car, disposal order, or into prison, whichever it be. So as a whole, yes, store supermarkets have got a big part to play. We can't force them, but we are doing what we can, working with them to try and put pressure on them to say, you do what you need to do, and you should be doing, to reduce the levels. Around that, we will deal with them where we can, we'll identify suspects where we can, we'll get them into the court system where we can. And certainly one or two where, around the town particularly, we've got three or four prolific shops in the town centre. We worked on a top three basis, and whenever they were out, as soon as they'd come out, we watched them, monitor them. CCTV played a big part in this as well, as did the stores, they're much on board with us in the town. First chance we could get on the stuff together, back into court. And in some cases, 12 months prison sentence as well, one or two of them, which is, the shoplifting is quite unusual. They tend to get a very short sentence, you've got that constant turnaround in that prison. So you're right, stores could do more, but we can't force them.
I mean, the resources that they use to investigate, I was lucky enough that Anna had a blue light incident on one particular evening years ago, went out with our local bobbing, and, sorry, police, person. And there was a theft from Asda. Actually, it was one of the employees who'd pocketed money in his sock as the camera got him. But I had to go back to Loughborough, had the cells then, the statements, everything. And it was a good 3 hours. And all we did then was take him home in Leicester City. And, you know, I'm sure it went through the system. But the time probably was 4 hours from start to finish. So it's very resource heavy, and where you could, it must be so frustrating for you, knowing that necessarily the shops aren't going to follow it up.
It is. I mean, what we're doing now, trying to speed the process, so rather than us actually attending all of these shops, we're looking at a retail basis where the actual paperwork, statements are sent to them through the post to the store saying, you're reporting the theft, you complete it, you send us a CCTV footage, it can be sent online, as we're looking much more around sort of smarter systems to use.
Yeah.
Send it into us, so rather than having to go to the actual store, collecting it, taking it. So we're speeding up a little bit there, so it saves some time. Okay. We still have an issue where certain stores could do a lot more to reduce the amount of offending in the first place.
Thank you. My original comment was going to be on that page, number 6, and I've got the same page from last year. And if I draw your attention to the first column, it says crime as at the 11th of July 2017 on the, second column. And that's the crime as of that date was 466, yeah? But this year, it says it's in 2017, was 539.
Are they exactly the same date?
Mm-hmm.
There's 3 days different. So on paperwork, yeah, on paperwork, on paperwork, it doesn't look as though it's increased an awful lot from 478 to 539. But if we take that date, 14th of July 2017, it was 466.
Difficult to say. Because I've neither read any figures from that year.
It's all of them that are screwed.
But a lot of reclassifications over the year. You'll certainly have crimes reported at the time and then reinvestigated become not crimes, and they deleted.
Right.
That could, well, it's that number, but you certainly see some deletions in most of those crimes. Some crimes are reclassified to become something else. So it might come as a burglary, possibly forced to do, turns out to be domestic or a criminal damage. So that could have some impact on some of those figures. Mm-hmm. Without having year on year to see the actual numbers and what they are, difficult to say for definite, but that would have a certain impact on some of those numbers.
Okay. All right, thank you very much.
thank you, Chair. Could I just, very interested in the shoplifting, if I could. A few years ago, there was quite a lot in the press that the law had been changed or sort of toned down a bit, and shoplifters were getting a fine of £80. And that was about, you know, they're taken to court, they got £80 an hour. So it's interesting when you said, you know, they actually get a prison sentence.
Well, then, it depends, is the honest answer. It depends. I mean, in most cases, it depends on the level of offending, their history. If somebody has committed lots of crimes before, they would end up into court. We can use fines on, well, it's not on the spot, we issue like a ticket through the court system. Can do it by other methods, like a country resolution, which could be like a caution, effectively. So it all depends on the level of offending, the value, the previous offending history, and sometimes what the actual store wants as well, because sometimes the store has that kind of lower level response, depending. And a 13-year-old child thinks you'd make four sweets from a store, that'd be appropriate at that level, whereas of course the one, we've got a couple in the town that comes out of prison, I guarantee shopping within 2 days, guarantee it. So if somebody like him, we would never use that. We've always been there and be for the process. All the same spot together, arrested, into court.
Also very interested in the way many shops display notice saying we will recover, go into civil recovery to recover our costs of any crime. I thought that would be quite a deterrent.
Okay, I hope Councillor Harris.
Yes, also on page 6, burglary figures in the middle. Beat 61 has gone down 70%, but my beat in 64 has gone up 48%. Is this disparity due to villains moving target?
We sent them down to UK on the bus bar.
Or police resources being targeted, or is it something else? Because I attended a parish council meeting in Haven on Monday, and the policeman came to report, and he said that one officer was back from maternity leave, but only in the office, and another officer was due to go on maternity leave, and the reporting officer actually apologised and said that the staffing levels were completely inadequate and they just couldn't do their job for lack of resources. So is that the reason why this area has suddenly gone to the top of the list for increases?
Probably there's two things there. If you tell me who it was, I'm spreading words with them, because that's not the subject of message we've had to public meetings at all. Our staffing, we do have fluctuation in staffing, of course we do, we always will have, but it doesn't particularly impact on the level of offending. That's more about how we would respond, how we deal with things. We have got a team of police officers. We have got some between us. We've got certainly allocated to Alban, Shepherd area, and Ditchley. We have a big team. If somebody's off, that beat doesn't go left alone. Across the board, I've got more PCs that I can move around. So if we come in one day and there's been a problem in 64 and Haven, say, I don't say, sorry, it's not been Haven this week, nobody on duty. I would use somebody from 61, 65, whichever beat I've got spare on that day, we move across and assign to it. So that kind of message being put out is really inappropriate. And tell me afterwards what it was, I'll do that separately. Because it's just not helpful at all.
We'll get the guy in trouble.
Well, no, it's not helpful because it's that perception. It's increasing the fear of crime and we don't want to do that. The fear of crime is always difficult to combat anyway. The reason for an increase on your particular bee, or it's three bees, let's say Shep, Shed, Haddon, and Dishley, so it's three distinct areas within that bee, so difficult to say. Numbers are not massive, it's gone from 29 to 43, so percentage-wise it's also quite a percentage, but actual real-term burglary is not a big increase, but it could be anything from police from prison recently, it could be someone that is new to offending, it could be lots of reasons.
Can I come back now? I accept that, it's fine. I do a lot of leafleting for various causes in Haddon, and I and my colleagues who leaflet have found no less than three people who had left their front keys, their keys in their front door. And in two of the cases, the people were actually inside, they'd just come back from shopping or whatever, and just got so involved in emptying the shopping or whatever, he's completely forgot the keys, and anyone could have taken those keys and got in straight away. Is there anything we can do to target Haddon and say, take your keys out?
Put it in the paper.
It's not just a Haddon problem, no. I have to say.
Across the board.
It's across all areas, it's not just it's across the country. People leave windows open, they're hot, but yeah. Doors unlocked.
We do that with students.
Yeah, we do a media release all the time. We've got a Safer Summer campaign that's always been brought up from us. I know that the local authorities share that and forward all the cheeks and things on there as well. Yeah, we tweet. It's that media campaign to try and get people just educated to lock your doors. Be in the back garden, not the front door, because a lot of people don't. And it's so easy just to walk into a room and empty something out quickly. While you're in the garden, you don't know what's happening. And keys in the front door, keys in the car door, it's not uncommon, of course. We try and get a message out all the time, and we have PCSOs in the top, so we walk in the dinks, and again, we're not all saying, keys are here. Luckily, it's me, it could be anybody. But we are constantly putting messages out across the various social media. And I'll make sure it's done again through the next week, and through the summer months, it's quite a common theme, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think the officer was trying to reassure the public in there that they were struggling to do the job and still doing it, but I think by doing it,
it comes out all the way around potentially, doesn't it? That's the risk, yeah.
Okay, thank you. I've got Councillor Bemington next.
Okay. Yes, I have a couple of points. I actually, like Kevin and Councillor Harris, live in the area that's had the greatest numerical increase in crime. It's Shepshed, Haddon and Dishley. I'm obviously Shepshed. But I actually wonder what, as a group, we can do to significantly affect these numbers. Councillor Taylor made the point that we're actually in the middle of a group that's all moving up. It's not just this area either, it's the whole country is having an increase. And I wonder, with us, whether it's just a question of virtue signalling, we're doing this, they're doing that, the other, but we aren't actually going to have a significant effect overall. The biggest area I have difficulty with nowadays is ASBs. There's been quite a dramatic increase. It's now, I think even more than planning, is now my biggest area of workload is antisocial behaviour, which I don't even think are mentioned in here, are they?
Because
what are they included? Which section are they included in?
Making communities safer. 12, 13. During quarter 1, the ASB
But it's not broken down now into the areas.
But it's a major problem for me. So, as I say, my big thing is, it's actually central government needs to be getting a grip of this thing. The loss of respect for the police, I think, is quite atrocious. And I don't think, as a council, we can do anything about that. It has to come from central government. And actually, I think we should be complaining to our MP more and saying, what are you doing about it as a parliament, rather than
support the police.
I think within the partnership, especially, I'm fairly new to the role, but what I can see is that we need to work even better than we are, closer together with the police and with the community safety partnership.
Yes, but as I say, I do wonder how much benefit that overall but that's going to be.
We can always do better. I wouldn't sit here and say, you know, we can't do any more. We can always do better.
I can accept that, but I just wonder how much difference it's going to make.
It's resource-led, isn't it? At the end of the day, we can only work to what resource we've got, and we work as best as we can.
I think as Sergeant Latham also said, it's not always a question of resources. And there has been quite a reduction in the respect that people have for the police. I think most of that has actually been caused by politicians. I don't think some of the chief constables are actually helping. But I do think that that's it. And I go back to my point, which is, what difference are we actually going to make? I think some of the things. I love the idea of putting balloons through open windows. Mm. I think that's a brilliant idea.
Well, that's for the students, we did.
Yeah, indeed. And I think it's been successful as well. I think it's a brilliant idea, and I love that and things like that. Mm. No problem with it at all. But
okay,
I just wanted to make
on the ASB. Point. Would you hold off? I've got a question on ASB as well, and we can all answer it together. Is that okay? Thank you. I've got Councillor Parsons next.
Mine's a little bit more general of a question. If I read the figures right, and I'm just taking the top line of page 6, so crime has gone up by 10.42% in the year. So I'm just taking that top figure. When I go through the report, and I recognise it's not really the council, it is a collective, so I realise the council's part of that is not huge. There is a collective effort. I go to something like page 9 and I see activity and I recognise that we are trying to do things. My problem is partly it's wording and partly it's I want the loop closed. So we say and we state quite clearly at the front end of this that we're intelligence and evidence led in what we do. We have just crime goes up, activity, but I want the loop closed as to what's working. Because I can't close the loop. I can't scrutinise it in terms of what's working and what's not. I can look at the activity. Bike theft up 14%. We've got orange bikes out. I don't know which one came first, whether the orange bikes was a response to bike crime up or bike crime's gone up. We did the orange bikes. It's the impact of the activity. It's closing that loop off in some way. And it's for me, it's in lots of places. There's activity. We're trying hard. I get that. I get that some of this stuff's good. Maybe it's the age-old conundrum of my marketing budget and which half's working. I don't know which bit's working. I'm trying to draw the conclusion of the evidence-led intelligence approach. I see the activity, but I don't see the bit I want after the activity, which is this worked and therefore we made the following next decision. I don't see the bit at the end of it. I see the activity. I see the figures going in the wrong direction. I want to try and close that loop somehow for the impact of what we've done. And I realise some of these things it's difficult to quantify. So I have to just go on the assumption that we know it's working. But that's a difficult thing for me, to just go on the assumption that because it's there as an activity, I know it's working. That's quite hard for me. I want to see the impact. I want to find some evidence of it working. And the figures would not say that in some areas. And so I want to iterate that back to, well, if we've done orange bikes and bike thefts up 14%, it's not working, what should we be doing? And it's that, I want to try and get some of that in here if I can in some way. Because I see the figures are good, I see activity, but I'm not sure what the impact of that is back on the figures. I can't get that loop closed. And I want to know if there's ways that we can do that. Because how are we making evidence and intelligence-led decisions if you can't tell me what was the impact of that thing that we did?
I'm going to make a statement and then my friends can join me. I completely understand where you're coming from. I think, and we can definitely try and look at that, and we try and lay some of that through the report, or we've tried to lay some of that through the report, but it's an ever continuously evolving and changing. So for instance, we take an offender approach, so we look at who's our top offenders. All of our subgroups are looking on their patches about who's in our top three, who's in our top five. Let's target those, get them off the street. But as we target them to catch and convict, to put them away, to get them off, to reduce the figure, the door's revolving. somebody else comes out of prison. It depends on who's coming out of prison and what their crime is and whether they're going to reoffend, to where that's going, what that's going to impact on. So we do monitor prison releases and we do look at what their offences are. The problem is you've got a forever revolving door. So there's bits that, that we know that we evidenced in here. So, you know, last year, domestic burglary was up significantly. So we targeted domestic burglary. We were looking at offenders that, that commit burglary and targeting that. That came down. We could see that in the figures. It was the same on vehicle crime, made a concerted effort on vehicle crime. Vehicle crime came down. But the problem is, in closing the loop on some of it, you've just got more people coming out the door behind. And depending what they're coming out for, will then have an impact on the spike in which crime it is. And it could be two coming out completely differently. One's vehicle, one's burglary. And that's going to have a complete impact because they go on, if they go on a spate. So it's, it's like, how do you close a loop? So for us, it's about location. It's about offender. Who's causing us the most impact? That's what they talk about. Who's causing us the most harm? Let's target them. What can we do about that? And as a partnership, what we've also done is, what are the key things that are really impacting us at the moment? So we've gone drugs, knife crime, and vulnerable people, both adults and youth, are the three biggest for us at the minute. And as a partnership, we took a decision in the last partnership meeting that that was going to be a focus for us. So we're starting to do big pieces of work on those as well. So they're the things that are most impactful to communities as well, but it is really difficult to close that loop.
See, I understand that. See, that's more meaning for me than a lot of the report. And the public, I think, would understand what you've just said there. But I'm not sure that they get that from the report. I think the public would be sympathetic to what you've just said there, and I understand it better with that description. And it's maybe it's the way we present what comes to mind.
I think for me, it's fairly new to this, it's very difficult to put it down on paper, and I think even though crime figures might be going up, the work that we're doing is bringing down the community's fear of crime, which is just as important as the crime figures, and that's really hard to put into a report. You know, you see that when I go out in the communities and I see work that's been done, and residents say, oh, it's so much better here now, this has been done. You can't ever quantify that in a report, and it's a really difficult, I'm still trying to get my head around it, how we do it and how it works, but it's really difficult to put it down in black and white on a report. And like Julie said, it just keeps going, something else pops up, and some of the figures are very minute, but if you just get five extra crimes in one area, that the figures just go through the roof. And that's, when you read that in black and white, that looks awful on paper, but when you look at it in the cold light, it isn't as bad as it looks on paper. And I
wish 170,000 people listened to that explanation, but I don't think it's going to happen.
I just think, again, support of colleagues. I think, you know, I've lived and breathed this partnership for 10 years, and probably a bit longer than you, in fact. Yes, just that is great. And it's a real challenge. I think my professional judgments, both inside the uniform service and outside, is, as Julie says, we work on a triangle, the victim, the location, the offender. And that's the work we always do. The offender is critical. I think what we are not best with in Charnwood is that we have a really high propensity of offenders. They're located here en masse, predominantly in some key locations. And those offenders will displace from one beat to another, depending on what work and activity is done. So, as you rightly say, as Julie points out, we're trying our best to target intelligence-led approach to enforcement around those individuals, and hence why the civil injunctions now is another bow that we're not just following criminal. And the victims will always take a priority, and they always look to secure and do what we can. I think the negative side is that location is very difficult, because again, as Councillor Harris says, you can do umpteen crime prevention events after events after events, as we do with students, but you can never negate the keys in the door, the insecure house. Unfortunately, a lot of that work that's done is about confidence. So a community may come forward and say, we've got an increase in crime, we'll look at what can we do to try and mitigate that risk of the increase, what can we do again to try and offer support. But I do think as we move forward, there's a big debate to be had now that obviously Councillor Taylor's arrived, because the challenges, certainly even in my time, having left to come here, you know, it's changed massively with the drugs, the knife, and the youth-related crime. And I think, you know, if we were to put all our resources down to crime prevention, then I think we'd be sitting here looking at serious case reviews about death, about, you know, the things that we've already got happening, And unfortunately, regrettably, we're going to have to make some decisions at senior management level, led by the executive board, about where we go. Because I think those are the greatest threats at the moment to our communities. And as you say, the fear of crime now, more and more, as I say to my colleagues, they're doing not quite sure at the moment, all about reducing knife crime. And regrettably, they are catching more and more 13 to 17 year olds with large swampy knives. Yeah. And everybody, unfortunately, you know, when they do a warrant, the first thing that's behind the door, one of them was a rolled up cardboard with a machete sticking out. So as they go through, so that whole triangle again has taken enough complexity, because the offender side of that now is driven around the need for drugs, the need to commit crime, and unfortunately they're now being tooled up, as we say, with knives. So there'll be big decisions, but I think the experience of 10 years has taught me that you'll never get that measure, no matter how much we try to get that. It's a valid question, because I think, you know, that's what we always ask. If we're going to use resource and put it first, what is the return we're going to get? And I think sometimes it's just going to be put that confidence and reassurance and that sort of element, but I think they're the new challenges we face.
And I completely agree, and I think one of the things that we tried to demonstrate in the report, and one of the things that when I came to performance, or Councillor Taylor and I came to performance, is all last year we started in quarter one with a plus 12%, and we've held that all year. And that, compared to the rest of the Leicester show, that which was plus 23%, as the biggest district with the most prolific offenders, whereas although it was plus 12, which, what, you know, was still a positive plus event, it was real positive for us. And that, you know, for us, that showed that some of the work that we were doing was starting to have a real impact for us. Because
it would have been worse without it.
It would have been.
I think I've picked up as well quite recently is that work will be done with the community, and it'll be monitored constantly. And as soon as they start to realise that this is not working, they just knock it on the head and we'll look at something else. Yeah. So that's, they don't just keep going because that's what we've decided to do. It's an ongoing thing that they will change the neighbourhood officers that are working there. They look at what's working, and they'll change it. So, you know, we don't just keep going with something just because we've decided to do with it. It's an ongoing change.
And it is about a collective approach to powers and tools. So it is not just about the police. It is about, as Tim said, about civil injunctions. It's like, who's best placed to try and have that disruptive impact? What can we do? What you know, we've taken civil injunctions. The police have taken civil injunctions. We've got criminal orders. We've got a whole raft of measures wrapped around people. Just because we've got that doesn't mean that they're going to stop doing what they're going to do. But it's what's available to us.
The thing to consider as well is that the more we do around targeting the offenders, targeting the drugs, you actually see an increasing crime on the back of it, bizarrely, because everyone we do creates a crime report. Every now and then, finding an address that we recover as a weapon, or a search with a weapon, is a crime report. So we're not going to stop doing it, because it's key that we do that work. But the flip is, you will see a slight increase of crime around the work we're doing to protect the community. So, but we need to do it, because by doing that, the knives are off the street. It's improving the situation out on the streets out there.
This is why it's important you guys come to this, and thank you for that, because it's much more impactful with you sitting there than it is from the pages. It's much more impactful. I genuinely mean, I wish 170,000 people would listen to it. You know, it won't happen. They won't go onto the website and listen to it tonight. But it's much more impactful in that way than I can ever get from going through the report. And so the public looking at that won't get what you've just said from looking at the report.
Well, you've been put it out.
It's good.
Okay. Councillor Fryer.
Thank you very much. I always find these reports very interesting, and I wholeheartedly support every effort that the police make. I have the greatest respect. I think it's a very difficult job at the moment, hugely difficult and very stressful. If we're talking about increase in numbers, if we look at page 9, I live in Barrow. We've gone up 53%. So some of you that are worried about going up a bit, we've gone up massively. And going back to what the officers have said, all of you police and council officers and the lead member, I could almost guarantee that's because certain people that have been away from the area for a few years are now back in the area. And this is where I think, as a councillor, we can often be your eyes and ears, and we can put out things that you may not be able to. Councillor Harris has already mentioned that through various things he's often delivering notice of leaflet. I'm round the village at least 3 times a day. I can see things. I have the right to put in the paper from a note from Hilary Fryer, councillor for Barry Onsaw and Sarby West. I am disappointed to see that the crime has gone up in this area, and we are keeping an eye on it. So I think it's beholden on all us councillors, because we represent everybody, to make sure we put things out. What I do think is quite sad, and I don't think it's just local, I think it's national. I think the media can cause more problems than a little, because they're always very negative. I know crime's gone up, and particularly the ones you've mentioned, knife crime, drugs, this type of thing, really serious. What I would do, all crime is serious, but there are grades of serious that have huge effects on people's lives. I mean, the fact that my local shop may have had a couple of shoplifters is not nearly as bad if someone was attacked on our playground. I'm not saying they have, but if they were, so there are different levels. Is that we very rarely hear a percentage or a number of people that have been arrested. I mean, the press will put out nationally that there have been X number of knife crimes in a certain area and people have been hurt. And then sort of 3 days later you'll read that people have been arrested for those crimes. So I think it's trying to get the balance that, you know, you say you know people that are in and out because you're arresting them. I should declare an interest that I'm an independent custody visitor and I see what's going on in the custody suites. Now that's nothing to do with the council, that's as Hilary Fry, a citizen. But I think we councillors have to take a much more responsibility. I think the whole population has to take a much more thing. I was saying before you came in, just driving here this evening from Barrow, I probably saw three motoring offences, two cars parked in my road with their windows wide open, and three front doors open. So you could have a policeman at every house and something would still happen. So I think it's beholden on us, but thank you very much. And I think I know why our crime's gone up 100% and something.
Cheers. That's Councillor Seaton.
Thank you, Chair. I'd just like to end on a very positive note, and I can say that because I'm crime beat 61. But that could be a lot lower than that. We have one. I mean, I'd like to put these results on my Facebook page. I dare not. We've got one particular road on there, and I think everybody on that road is friends with me on Facebook. And if I put that down there, they will know what shed's been broken into, what house has got squatters, and what bad neighbours and antisocial behaviour. So when you say media, you've got local media as well, you've got the Facebook there. And I see, obviously, the comments, and then say, report it to the police, and then you get someone going, oh, it's a waste of time, they're all good. But of course, that's the first person they'll ring, isn't it? So the respect thing, I think, is there. But begrudgingly, I think to other people, they don't want to see that, they want to, I don't know, face up to the fact that, you know, they need the police, but the police are there when they need them, and that's the way it should be. And keep on doing what you're doing in Thurmaston. Thank you very much. Well, Thurmaston, Syston, Quenyborough.
Barbie Thorpe.
Yeah. South Croson.
Councillor Harris. I think we're going to wind up here, but yeah. Councillor Harris.
Yes, just one final note. The Sergeant referred to the figures being skewed when you find knives on youths and whatever, but I'd rather see a large figure for that than a larger figure for them using them.
Yeah, I agree completely. And it's that work needs to be done. By doing that work, recovering the knives, too many people carrying the knives, and that could be as an offender, as a vulnerable person, as a victim. So the knife carrying itself has a whole raft of reasons behind it. So it's important to do that work, but longer term, improves things, doesn't it? Yes, we're going to see an increase on the figures around knife carrying because we're doing the work and finding and detecting it. But longer term, it's good. We need to be doing that work.
Just to come back to ASB, because I think that's where the council, the borough council, can work with the partnership, but also the police, and make a meaningful impact, I think, on our residents. And I know Shepshire has been touched on, antisocial behaviour, but look at Town Centre as well, where we have these have been street gangs. I've not seen it in the report before. The first time I've seen this wording here. I think for future references, I think it'll be better to delete that. I don't know if it's just youngsters who are bored and hanging around, let's say. And I know I've worked in Loughborough Town Centre since November. I probably know all of them by first name and the ones that hang around. But what are we doing? What are we doing as a partnership to impact that, to lessen the effect on the wider public? But also, say, inception as well, what's happening, what are the plans?
I think first of all, the Devon Street Gang is a definition set by law, so that group have been decreed that. So that's not a partnership, that's not a localised issue. Mostly under the ASB Crime and Policing Act, they brought in Urban Street Gang definition, mm-hmm. and they brought in legislation to tackle it. I think that's why it's in this report now, is because for the first time, Leicestershire Police have identified, because they're identifiable as a gang, mm-hmm. Their behaviour fits the definition. So, as I say, if we sit here now and call this for me, it's an urban street gang as defined by Leicestershire Police. Okay. So those individuals are in there, clearly we don't put their names in there. The ones that are identifiable and committing offences, as Paul said, I think it's the first time in a long time that, again, the police have been very proactive with their legal team and working in partnership with us to get the civil injunctions against three of them. And obviously they have prohibitive non-association clauses. They have areas that they can't enter into because, unfortunately, with any gang culture, they want to be associated because the greater impact they can have is in their numbers. Yeah. So I think first and foremost, that's just the clarity of the urban street gang, and that definition will have to stand until they're either declassified or arrested, or that could grow. And I think it's good now that, again, talking reality terms, is that we are looking at and looking for the criteria for an urban street gang, because if we can identify them, we can then take a civil injunction, an urban street gang injunction against them, if we get the threshold. At the moment, we've never got to that stage. These are not still issues, but they're not at the stage of being what we call a great enough threat to take an injunction. And then obviously, as we said in the report, to come back to your point, Chair, is youth-related ASB, youth-related crime, is clearly at the moment one of our huge resource demands, high demand resource for my team, for Paul's team. And as you say, there's an element of boredom, as you guess, what you use. But the approach we take is, we take an incremental approach. In the first instance, if we get reports of an ASB that's increased in localities such as town centre, we use the youth offending services, have an impact team. So again, people who are trained and skilled in that area will go into that locality. There'll be no uniform presence. Obviously, we're not there to try and engage with the youth, because again, the last thing that I or Paul have so far devoid now of what youth want is we wouldn't have that impact. So they will go in and work, again, and seek their views, because that's then where they'll feed back to the partnership, what the youths are saying to the board. Okay, so we'll look at diversionary work. Our sports and rec team do a load of work all across the summer, hits campaigns, etc., to try and engage them. But regrettably, some of those youths that you try and engage are not the ones who are going to engage, because they've got another agenda. And obviously, once we've tried that incremental approach, if they're not going to engage, that's when, again, in partnership, we'll move to an enforcement tactic, where we'll then start incrementally, and that might involve an anti-social behaviour contract. They can say, I'm not going to sign it, some of them do. Obviously, that will be a referral to youth offending services, and we try our best wherever we can not to, to deter your offenders. However, that said, as with some of these youths, they're duty bound to do that. So I think at the moment, the ASB is an issue. Obviously, it spikes, as you can imagine, during certain times. The summer's always one, and it's the safest summer campaign. Halloween, November, bonfire, going to see the spike again. But I think, we're very quick now that we have a town centre, Loughborough Central Delivery Group that comes together. It's formed, as you know yourself, from the bid, from the new ambassador role, and they'll come together as they will tomorrow every 4 weeks, and they will sit and look at trends and names, because it's an information sharing agreement that they can do that, and we'll pick off those persistent offenders, but look at the diversionary work for those youth who are maybe just a bit bored and want something else, but those critical few who are not going to engage, we need to be really robust about, because unfortunately they're the ones who have the greatest impact. So I think, as you say, in that respect, from an urban street gang right the way down to that younger girl or male who unfortunately is just a bit naughty, this is a wide spectrum.
Right, okay.
We try to pick up the critical few.
The reason being is I think a lot of this antisocial behaviour is linked, it's the same group or group or wider group. Because they travel to Selby and they cause antisocial behaviour there. They travel back, they hang around at the recce here, which is fine, that's what they're supposed to do. They come into the town centre to cause issues. then they go over to Morrison's or the Maxwell Drive Estate, and they've been caused issues. So it is this, I wouldn't say the same group, but the same wider group of friends and associates there. And I think we haven't, in the 7-8 months that I've been working in the town centre, tackled that at all, because they've had free reign. So there's no evidence of anything that you've just said there that I've seen myself. There is no evidence, absolutely none, because I speak to all of those kids regularly. And they tell me where they hang around, and they tell me what they do. So that's fine. But I didn't want to bring that here. I just wanted to know what you did and what was there. And it's so interesting listening to that, because I see, as a county councillor, I see the impact team go in, and I just see them sit there. And I've had the same conversation with the officers of the county council. I've seen them sit there and then walk away, and the gang is still there, not engaged at all. So what they're doing and what officers are saying to me and what I see in reality is two separate things. And I'm starting to pick up on that now. And it causes a lot of concern to these people. I know you're itching to come in, but this is what I'm seeing myself. I could read you off a WhatsApp from the managers that work in my store from last night, and then I can read you on the night before. And the police came yesterday because they're doing a patrol, and then they moved away and the gang was still there, and there was about 40 youths out there. So can you imagine how daunting that must be for people visiting the town centre? You know, if you've got a gang of 40 of youths there. So imagine half of them in Sowerby and the other half in Dishley. Sorry, not Dishley. Yeah, in Dishley. Can you imagine what is happening? But we, as a community safety partnership, nobody's come to put that in that report that they're working and they're trying to eliminate this. This has been ongoing since I've been working in the Luffy Town Centre. And if it's been ongoing so far and for so long, why isn't it in this report that you're saying that you're tackling this? Because a lot of these figures here of antisocial behaviour would be that gang, or would perceive be this gang. You mentioned a beggar, and you've got an injection of a beggar. I can understand that, but there's nothing being done against these kids, and there's lots of them. And I'm not saying that this is the solution here. We're going to find a solution here. I'm just relaying that what I see and what you've said is two different realities.
Beauty of the chair again is sitting here as I do on the Loughborough Central Delivery Group. Obviously, Andy Rhodes has comes on behalf of the bid. And Andy Rhodes comes, and again, we're intelligence led, and obviously everything that you've said, and again, it's your opinion, I respect that, but obviously he tells us the exact opposite. Andy Rhodes has told us that the town centre has significantly improved. You know, he turns around and said the youth issues, he's invited them into McDonald's, he engages with them, and actually, you know, exactly the opposite. So actually, I'm thinking they're itchy fingers thinking, who can we target? But Andy Rhodes, as you say, is telling us the moment it's 100% improvements. I think that's what we said when the PCC visited as well. We had that meeting with Donald. So, for me, it's a question.
I think the council should just review their CCTV footage, because you covered the town centre, so you'll be able to evidence that through the CCTV.
What we've got regarded against is human rights kicking in, and people who gather in a town centre unless they commit a criminal offence. It's not for me or anybody in this room that we could challenge them. Again, as you rightly say, through CCTV, we do see youth. We see all sorts of things in town, but. You know, we can't use, because obviously that's governed by both Human Rights and the Surveillance Commissioner, that we can't use that unless a criminal offence is committed. So the gathering of youths or anybody of that order, you know, would be, well, we couldn't. It's beyond our.
No, that's fine. I'm just laying it out there, because I'm thinking the issues that you're having in Sowerby, the issues that you're having in Shepshed, I'm just saying that they probably are linked.
Can I just assure you that we are aware of that, and I would just echo what Tim said, which is why I was thinking that we've been asking that question constantly about Loughborough Town Centre, and the feedback has been completely opposite around that it has improved, but we do recognise that it escalates. We are aware of exactly the young people that you are talking about, and we take exactly the same approach that we do with offenders, and I can assure you there are multi-agency meetings happening about those young people. To do exactly the same thing we do about offenders, to look at who's currently working with them, what support we can put in place, how we can tackle and get rid of that behaviour. And it is exactly the same approach.
Right, okay. Thank you. That's it on the ASB. Anybody else wanted to have anything else before we did the...
Thank them very much.
Just one thing on the report itself, on reporting figures. And this is, I noticed when I read through the report. If you look at the actual dates that you're reporting on, Right, so on page 5, that table, it's 27th of June to the 27th of June. But then you turn over the page and it's from the 11th, it's a different date. And then you look at the back page and there's probably more examples there. It's a different date as well. So we're looking at lots of different ranges of figures and lots of different percentages. Some of them for the, you know, it says all crimes, but it'll say 10.42 here, it says 11.13 there, and here it says 12.6. Could we just ask it, make it work more consistent so we have a set of figures, rather? Because if I'm saying if crime has gone up by 12.6% and somebody says, no, it's gone up by 10.42%, we're not comparing apples with apples because it's different dates.
Yeah. It's a fair mark. I think Inspector Barker did raise that with him. I think he was being awfully helpful by giving them most up to date. And I said, well, I'm doing a comparative. Yeah, I'm even doing it exactly as you do, Chair, so I totally agree. I think we'll do that. Why would we stick to one table?
Yeah, just opposed to pick a date and say that's the date we're reporting to.
And that quarter, and then if the meeting's a fortnight later, well, you're still using the last quarter's figures.
Yeah, that's it. Thank you. That's just for the report, I think. Thank you very much. Cheers.
Thank you.
We'll go on to our HMA. Thank you very much. Item 8, which is the Corporate Plan Annual Report 2017-18. And we're joined by Suzanne. Suzanne Kinder, would you like to introduce yourself for the...
Suzanne Kinder, Corporate Improvement and Policy Officer here at CBC.
Fantastic.
If I could just introduce the report to yourselves. This particular report is to present the annual performance information for 17-18, which evaluates how effectively the Council has delivered the theme set out in the Corporate Plan. The board is requested to comment on the annual report that's submitted at the appendix and scrutinise the annual performance attained by the council. Quarterly and annual performance reporting is a key element of monitoring progress towards delivering the council's corporate objectives and initiatives as set out in the corporate plan and the associated annual business plan. On a quarterly basis, the performance scrutiny panel receives performance reports and allows it to monitor progress against achieving the agreed targets, which again sets out the delivery of the corporate plan. Quarter four information was presented to the performance panel just a couple of weeks ago, of which Councillor Fryer was chairing the meeting. This annual report is set out on the back of that quarter four information. This is the second year of performance reporting on the current corporate plan year, and the attached annual report, as I said, presents the results for 17-18. So if I could just go into the report itself, you'll see it's split into two sections. The first half of the report is what we call the infographic section, so it very much focuses on key numbers, visuals, pictures. And then the second part of the report is a lot more detailed performance information with regards to the facts and figures in terms of how performance has been over the past 12 months. And that was very much at the recommendation of this group and also performance scrutiny as well, in that they wanted the two-pronged approach in order to inform residents and all other stakeholders as fully as possible with regards to performance. So my intention today is to provide you with an update with regards to the performance for 17-18. Chair, how would you prefer me to do it? Would you prefer me to report by exception, or would you prefer me to do it by question of the panel?
Question of the panel, I think. Yeah, that's fine. Thank you very much, Ben. Right, so we have the corporate plan in front of us. Is there anybody who would like to raise any questions on anything that within the plan? Councillor Seaton, yeah.
Thank you. Thank you very much for this. Nicely presented, clear. You've got the 43 empty homes been brought back into use. I'm picking that out. There's nothing much you can do about not reaching the targets. I know that it's, well, there is. You've got somebody that works on it. But you're not very far below. But is there, pardon me because I might have missed it, is there an action in there to say what you're going to do in the future to encourage more landlords to come to?
There, in the latter end of the report, there is commentary on what's been achieved up until quarter four, and then where appropriate, if there's any mitigating action at that stage of reporting, it's included. If not, it is very much highlighted that it's going to be included within the business plan the following year. So, for instance, that 1-43 homes, that's been included into the 18-19 business plan, and the quarter one performance report is due at performance in 2 weeks' time.
Okay, thank you. I think that was our main comment last time, that we were very good at patting ourselves on the back, but not extremely good at saying, okay, we've failed here, and we acknowledge that we've failed, and to that end, we're doing this, that, and the other to ensure that it will get better in the future. Thank you.
If I may, Chair, I probably should have pointed out as well on the infographics pages where something is in grey colour, that is where we've negative or not achieved with regards to our performance. So we have tried to be as transparent as possible based on the feedback of this group, where we're not performing in as well as we can be, like you say, rather than just patting ourselves on the back for the things we have done.
I think, as I say, that's what we noticed last year and we commented on that. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yes,
I'm not going to repeat what, because we did view this in the performance scrutiny, I'm not going to repeat all of that. I did have a little bit of concern about some of the key performance indicators. One of them that worries me, I'm just using this as an example, I'm not trying to re-scrutinise everything now, just use this. But one of the most important in there, I think, nowadays, is actually the people's response to the web service. It is long term going to be the main source of interaction between us and the residents. So it's, I think, a vital part of what we do. We've got a figure, a target figure, of 53% satisfaction, which is, I think, a very low figure.
Yeah, too low.
And we didn't meet that. We were at 47. Now, we did discuss it at performance scrutiny, and it was mentioned that one of the reasons for it is because the way that it's put on the screen is because people only go and search for it if they're unhappy. If they're pleased, they're not going to go searching for it. And I can understand
just
that.
Click away,
yeah. Yeah. So it was actually agreed that they are going to go away and make it more available so more people will go. But I do think that that sort of thing does need looking at, and it needs a much more, it needs looking into more than just people saying, well, we think it's because of this. I actually think, and there are one or two others in there that I have concerns about, and Jeff knows one or two of them, I think. I'm not going to go, as I say, I'm not going to go through, but I think it's important that an exercise is carried out on an annual basis to have a look at these figures and say, are these still the right figures to go for?
Okay, should we take that back to the performance area?
Yeah, okay, that's fine. Okay.
Yeah, please.
Yeah, that's okay. Thank you. That's fine. Councillor
Harris. On dog fouling, on a technical point, I'm fascinated to find out how on earth you measure
a reduction
or increase. I'm glad
to see you. Can I just comment on that as well? It doesn't matter what figures you put there, you could put, we've put 75% reduction. And this comes to credibility of the council. Mm. Nobody's going to believe us if we put that figure in. Nobody's going to believe us because the dog muck and all that and litter is one thing we get, councillors get lots of casework on.
Yes, in Haddon, particularly, it comes up at every single parish council meeting with nauseating regularity, but quite literally. But
there's some statistics which are true, not doubting the statistic. It's the believability out
just
there.
Just to confirm on page 13 under SLE3RS1 and point C, it does state the success criteria. In total, 123 dog fouling patrols were undertaken, and that is where 32% has arisen from. So the information is there. How believable or not?
I'm not doubting that it's not true. It's just the believable people say, "Oh, yeah, right."
There's only certain group of people that are at fault there, and it's not the council. It's the people that own the dogs.
Councillor, if you want to carry on.
I'll just say that yesterday, outside my own house, I found three separate piles.
Clean up your
message. It's already trying to send you a message.
Sorry
for laughing.
That's what they do in my village. They put them on the gate. Do not foul, let your dog foul here.
But this has been measured in some way. So I suppose you're asking what the actual basis of it is.
Yeah.
Which it doesn't explain in this report.
No.
But beyond the report, there is, within the service, they've got some criteria that they've used to make that assessment.
Yeah.
I take the point about whether that then leads to a credible... Because it actually says in the detail on page 13 that there's 32% reduction in three key targeted areas. But clearly some work was done on some areas where they've measured however they measure it, and they've remeasured however they measured it and worked out the difference.
And just to confirm, that was a success criteria approved by Cabinet as well.
Councillor Seacon, we're not disbelieving it, we're just saying we believe it. Councillor Seacon.
Probably it's a wording issue there. Is it 32% less reported?
What are we
recorded, or could we put it in a more believable way of that? Yes, and it does come up nauseatingly often in council, and you know that it's not somebody from Thurmaston walking their dog in Dishley, it's somebody from Dishley walking their dog in
down
Dishley.
Your road.
Something along the lines of 32% reduction in dog fouling in targeted patrolled areas, I have to speak to the service area.
Probably make it a bit more believable then. It's the stray dogs who are collected. Do we charge the residents? Come across the dogs, claim them.
I don't know the answer to that, but I could find out for you.
Sorry, Councillor, I don't believe we do.
Having had pun?
I don't believe we do.
We may not. But if they're put in certain kennels to get your dog back, to get your dog back.
Yeah.
I was looking after my daughter's dog, and it jumped out of a second-story window onto my cherry tree and ran off, and then came home. Someone didn't recognise it, and very kindly took it to the kennels. But you do have to pay to get them back. But you have to be careful that you don't make the fine so huge that someone says, "All right, keep the dog then." Case by case, really. I mean, I did not expect a dog to open a window and jump out on a tree, which is what he did.
Well,
I'm
clever,
these
dogs.
Okay,
thank you.
Okay.
Cheers, thank you.
No, thanks.
That's it?
Okay. No, just one more. And again, it's this believability aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
It says three older people's sports and physical activity programmes delivered with 3,509 total attendances.
Yeah.
I presume
what
you mean...
Sorry,
page 6. I presume you mean three programmes, as in, it couldn't be 1,000 people per attendant, per activity.
It says programmes,
Three programmes delivered with a total attendance of 3,509.
Not events.
Yeah. Not
events. Right, okay, it's just this...
No, it's the programmes. Okay. It's like at the leisure centre or at the green gym or the walking groups.
Right, okay.
That come out.
See, it's
far
confused. Can you imagine the layperson picking it up?
Three programmes for older people.
When you want to highlight the
offering sports and physical activities delivered, blah, blah, blah.
Because they come to our village every week, guided walk to us. Once you get older, Councillor Mayor, you'll appreciate these things.
I was going to say this. Right, if we're through with this report, is there any other comments that we'd like to make? If not, thank you very much. Cheers, everyone. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And that brings us to the end of our agenda. Our next meeting is on the 24th of October 2018. Just want to thank you all for attending today.
Thank you.
Cheers, thank you. Meeting.
I think you're okay.